welcome back to another episode of a podcast written by a software engineer. I'm your host, Perrin. Today we're doing another Ask Me Anything for episode 30. Even saying episode 30, that just sounds absolutely crazy. What is that? That's 30 hours of content that I never thought I was going to make. But I do mean it to say just thank you all for absolutely wasting your time listening to any of this. No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, thank you for taking the time for, you know, just finding a reason or giving me a reason to talk to people that I never expected myself to talk to. I mean, there's people across the country that I've managed to speak on this podcast. There's people that I've been in a room with that we just, you know, talk about different topics in the software engineering world. So yeah, I keep on saying that this journey was very selfish to begin with. Just every time I do talk to someone, it was for myself. It's so I could learn something new. But as these episodes go on and on and on, there was just something about, hey, if there's another person who listened to this and could learn at least one thing, I'll take that as a win. So, I mean, I can't say this enough. Just thank you for listening to this. And yeah, shall we get into this? Nothing different than this Ask Me Anything format. I think we've done a couple of these before, and I'm always excited by answering some of these questions. These questions are from friends, they're from people that reached out online, they're from people with just genuine curiosity in terms of whether it's how I make this podcast or just my take on different topics. I'm so excited to jump into all of it. So there are 39 questions in total, and I've broken down into four different categories, starting with daily life, tech, ambition, and then miscellaneous. I'll be numbering the questions as we go. So out of 39 questions, you can't figure out how far along this whole podcast is. So if we start with question number one, as an avid traveler who used to visit European countries for 48 to 72 hours, what's your tip on seeing the country of choice in such a short time? Yeah, thanks for the question. It's a good one to kick off. So I would say plan realistically. What I mean by that is that you can't do everything. So do the stuff that appeals to you. If you just want to bar hop for a couple of days, do that. If you're a sucker for landmarks, which I personally am, so pick any city, ask other people what are the landmarks in that city, and kind of just plan your trip around that. Speaking of, actually, another good tip would probably be go in one direction. Start, I guess, on one side of a city and then just go all the way to the other. Instead of having all these back and forth, that could really just help minimize the time to travel across. And it really did help me out explore more different, I guess, places, landmarks, restaurants within a destination that I like to visit. Actually, I can find one more tip on that is plan your breaks. Being on holiday, it's supposed to be relaxing. If you feel like you're always trying to overdo, like, 8 different landmarks, which I personally am always guilty of. Try to just slot in as many things that you could have downtime with. One thing that I really do enjoy is if it's a nice sunny day, find a busy street, find a cafe that has doors outside and just people watch. I've done it in different cities and I've absolutely loved it. So I think being able to rest in between your fun activities and still absorbing all the culture is something that is also super, super important to me. So question number two. How do you compare living in San Francisco to London? How different are they, and which one do you prefer? Another good question, thanks. I feel like I'm going to say it's a good question for every single question. So anyways, as a context, I lived in London for 4 years, and immediately after, I moved to the Bay Area, and I lived there for 3 years. It's a pretty like back-to-back comparison in terms of London versus San Francisco. Living in London versus living in San Francisco, the biggest difference I could probably point out is the pace. What I mean by that is like the pace of the city, the pace of how everybody just go about day to day. If you could compare, I guess a lot of people would think about comparing San Francisco to New York in this case. In London, everything feels more close, more connected, busy, concentrated. I use a lot of these words and it's mostly, I guess, to describe how, I guess, maybe public transport in London is way more accessible to go to different areas than the Bay Area, for example. When I think about every day that I've spent in both locations, London was somewhere where you're always, you know, very willing to go out at any second, just because you could always reach somewhere, not just the underground. You could take the bus and £1.50 later, you'll be at a pub, maybe like in a neighborhood that you've never been to, and vice versa. You could get home from virtually anywhere at that point. So I think in terms of just going in and out to places, that's kind of one of the differences that I do remember seeing in London versus San Francisco. in terms of just general, I guess, weather, San Francisco is beautiful in terms of it's always sunny. And there's so much outdoors that you could breathe and go to. In London, of course, there's big parks, and that's really great too for the people who enjoy that. So I think depending on how big of a nature fan you are, there's that distinction over there. One thing I do want to call out, actually, is the multiculturality. Both cities are very multicultural. Coming from a first-generation Eastern Asian, I've never really felt out of place anytime I am in London or San Francisco. And that's really just a shout out to the people there, to the city there, that really just embraces the world. And speaking of the food in both places, it's amazing. There's always something that you could find, discover new about food that you've never had before, and you'll be blown out of your mind every single time. So, but yeah, that's a really quick roundup of comparing living in San Francisco to London. Which do I prefer? I'm not gonna answer that. I think both has its absolute appeals to all of it. Shout out to San Francisco for always being nice weather. Allowing me to have a motorcycle out there and hang out with all the people and go to spots that I've never expected myself to drive to ride to. Shout out to London for Morley's. Shout out to Morley's, that's what it is. And of course my personal favorite, Chicken Cottage. Anyways. Question number 3. What do you love / hate about San Francisco? Okay, I'll be a bit diplomatic over here. I'm going to start with the hate, and then I'll talk about everything that I love about it. But hate, very simply, the public transport. Okay, fine. Hate is a very strong word. I'm sorry for that. I think it's some aspect where I think it could definitely use some improvement in the sense of just making the city more accessible. I know I'm not providing all the best solutions out there, but I think there are some parts of San Francisco that are absolutely beautiful, but very inaccessible. If you don't have a car, if you don't have a motorcycle, if you don't have any public transport. For example, going to the Outer Sunset or even going to the Golden Gate Park even, sometimes it's just a little bit hard to get there. So given the fact that I think nowadays people are just willing to go to more places, willing to do more stuff, one thing that I personally do think would make a massive impact is a top-notch public system in San Francisco. On the other hand, though, what I love about San Francisco is probably, as I mentioned before, the greenery. The fact that you're so close to the outdoor space and it's always good weather out there. It probably rains like 5 times a year. It's a bit scary, of course, with the droughts and the wildfires, but for the times that you don't have to worry about this kind of stuff, that you really just get to breathe and enjoy the space, there's hardly any other state, I guess, that really compares to California and to San Francisco to have all these like beautiful views everywhere. So that is something that I definitely remember appreciating, and I don't take it for granted now that I live in New York. Question number 4. Where is the best wing place in San Fran? First of all, I'm not going to get shtick for saying San Fran. I don't say it. I'm just reading the question, if anything. I'm not sure what's the thing about people in the Bay Area hating the word San Fran, but I'm with you. I'm with them. It sounds stupid. So, but speaking of, where is the best wing place in SF? There's this really underrated place called Crispy Crunchy Chicken. It's literally a fried chicken place inside of a gas station. Shout out to Vinny. You know what's up. But to answer this question, I'll kind of frame it as like not the best wing place, but just fried chicken place, because some of the fried chicken places does wings as well. My favorite fried chicken place spot in San Francisco is Brenda's. There are two locations, I believe, in San Francisco. One in Nopa and one probably closer to Soma, I believe. But the one I always love going to is Brenda's Meat and Three. So that is definitely what I think is the best fried chicken / wings place in San Francisco. Question number 5. 24 hours in San Francisco. Where would you go? I don't want to answer this question. There are so many places to do, but in the theme of, you know, being efficient and trying to make the most out of a single trip, a short trip in San Francisco, I would start off in Chinatown in the morning, get some breakfast over there, there's everything good, and then go towards the ferry building, and then slowly get your way to Fisherman's Wharf. At some point, get lunch at Brenda's, of course, and then go to the Golden Gate Park area. There's a really good lookout point. I don't know how to describe it. It doesn't really have a name, but if you DM me, I will give you the coordinates to find it. Just to absorb the city a bit, and then slowly make your way back to maybe towards Hayes Valley to have a couple of drinks over there. For dinner, I would say House of Prime Rib. I think it's a must-do in the city. But another good spot for dinner is probably Daiho out in Japantown. And then towards maybe later in the afternoon, in the evening, I would probably say just hang out in Mission. And I think that really completes the 24 hours in San Francisco. Question number 6. When are you posting more travel pics, and why on earth do you pose like that? Okay, as a quick context, this is referring to my Instagram, @DrPoor, where I post all my travel pics, and I do pose very specifically for all of them. But the first part of the question, when am I posting more pictures, more travel pics? Well, the obvious answer is when I travel more. I know during the pandemic, I definitely did not travel at all. So now that, you know, we're kind of coming out of it, or we came out of it mostly, this is the exciting part. I definitely am traveling more, and just more to come. In terms of why do I pose like that, that is a good question that I don't even know, to be honest, for myself. But I think actually the first one that I ever posed like this was right outside of my university, the main campus, the main building. This was on our convocation, so during the graduation day. I think by the end of all of it, we were all just wearing our robes, and for me, it was something about like, oh my god, we're done with school, we're so done with it. So I literally just lied down in front of the main building, and my parents were there, they're really cool, took a picture of it. And then next thing you know, we kind of caused like a flash mob, because there was other people that joined in. So that has always been like a fun memory, and just to know that, hey, that really was just a fun moment, a fun beginning, and there's always stuff that you carry with you. So ever since then, every photo I've kind of posed like that, where I'm just lying around a little bit around the world. All right, that was all the questions in terms of the daily life category. Moving into the technology category. Question number 7. Should all devs learn ML and deep learning? That's a great question. Don't get me wrong, I'm not an expert in ML or deep learning or anything for that matter, but I don't think it's a necessity. Watch me eat my words in a couple of years where everybody needs to know ML or deep learning, but I think a lot of it, how I think about it, is that deep learning and ML, they're slightly low level than most people assume it is, in the sense of I can't just grab an ML and use it in my day-to-day activity. I can't just grab deep learning and apply it to everything I do immediately. I think a lot of it is just the algorithms, the frameworks, the behind the scenes, the backend systems that power different tools that we use. So in terms of should all devs learn ML and deep learning, I personally say it's not as necessary, but I think you should if you really are passionate in that field. I compare it to a lot of things where, for example, if you want to get into the gaming industry, then it's like, should they learn about how to use, I guess, Unity or different engines that build games? And I think the answer to that is yes. And if you're super into web dev, which I personally was in my whole career, is should you learn these different web technologies going into it? And my answer would be yes in that case. So I think speaking of just when we talk about the future and talk about new technologies coming in, is there's always curiosity. And as a person working in tech, should you learn new technology is yes, 100%. And depending on what you're into, that will really shape what you should learn. So very specifically, should all devs learn ML? I personally don't think so. But if you are somebody that absolutely loves the space, that absolutely love to know, hey, how come they could predict my autocomplete so correctly? Or even just normal general curiosity, yeah, get into it. You never lose anything from learning something new. Question number 8. What do you think about GitHub Copilot and how that is shaping the way to develop applications? Another great question. My personal take on GitHub Copilot is it's a good tool. Think about the mechanics that uses different wrenches and different tools to build whatever they're trying to build. I think that's how people should treat GitHub Copilot, is it's something that you should use to leverage your personal capabilities, as long as you know how to use it. it sounds pretty dumb to say that, but if you give me a wrench and in the next 5 seconds, there might not be the most expertise behind me to know how to use it correctly for different tools and different systems and different piece of cars or different use cases where a wrench can be used or even that sometimes cannot be used. So for GitHub Copilot, just very briefly, what GitHub Copilot is it's an extension that you could feed into your editor, for example, VS Code, Visual Studio Code. And then as you code, you could just write comments as prompts, and then it will actually just spit out the code that you're trying to write. It's a tool to leverage just any developer that's trying to build more things. And in terms of how the way it affects people developing applications, writing code day to day, I think people will write more code, number one, just objectively more code to begin with less effort. But in terms of correctness of the code, I think if you think about how one individual codes compared to how a group of people codes, that's really the leverage, the I guess, benefit of using a tool like GitHub Copilot. One little asterisk that I know I've said over the years is don't rely on it with your life, if that makes any sense. You still need to know how to do stuff without it. The fun comparison of people saying that, like, hey, use a calculator, but you'll never have it always in your pocket in your life. And lo and behold, we were wrong about it. But don't get me wrong, people are still able to do math without calculators. Hopefully, I'm crossing my finger. So that's kind of how I treat GitHub Copilot, is I welcome this technology. I welcome the advancement. I welcome the benefit that it really helps the, you know, up-level every single individual in the dev world, in the tech world. I think it's always just being cautioned in terms of, can we live in a world without it? I just hope that the answer is still yes, and I just can't wait to see more people using it and see what they build out of it. Question number 9. What do you think about the future of development? Yeah, I like this. And by development, I'm pretty sure I mean the software engineering development world, in the sense of building applications, building web applications, building mobile applications, building applications for hardware, like a toaster. I think a lot of it is interesting in the sense of nobody really can predict the future, but this is an opportunity for me to just, hey, here's what's going to happen in 10 years. The big buzzwords that you hear nowadays, of course, there's the deep learning, right? The ML deep learning. There's the no-code era where so many more individuals, whether they have a tech background or not, are able to build more things with tech. As I keep on saying, without having prior knowledge or full deep knowledge in terms of lines of code, for example. And in terms of just the future of development in general, is that there's a lot of AI stuff where it's like, hey, tell an AI to build something and it'll do it. So in terms of trying to make a prediction among all these different factors and all these different possibilities, I think one interesting, I guess, concept that people are talking about is prompt engineering. It basically describes the user, the human, that is able to prompt questions to be able to leverage all these tools to build things. So I think in terms of future development, there's already, I see it at least, a need for prompt engineers out there. Actually, don't get me wrong, there's always going to be a need for old school applications. And by old school, I always mean like back in the good old days where you have a back end and a front end and a database and loads of different smaller like microservices in between all of it. I think those will always exist. People keep on talking about, for example, the finance industry where, hey, look, they're running everything on COBOL, which is a language that is decades old. I think there's always going to be these examples that very important core infrastructure still exists and still needs the brain of people that know how to use these tools. So in terms of future of development, I kind of see it in both ways, where a lot of the good practices that we have today are maintained and people will keep on learning good practices, no matter how old the technology is. And then when we talk about the future of the new development of everything that is outside the box, that really is the space that I'm looking forward to in terms of prompt engineers, leveraging deep learning, and being able to see that applied to, you know, just our day-to-day lifestyle when what we use, we don't even know it's using some deep learning behind it. Question number 10. What's your favorite language and why? My favorite programming language, at the moment at least, is Golang. There's obviously TypeScript that is very precious in my heart throughout these years, but yeah, my new obsession is Golang. Well, not really new. I've used it for maybe a couple of years now in different random projects, but why is it my favorite language? I think it's the fact that it is very typed. I can't throw all the technical words behind why it's a good thing, but I think it's the fact that it also has a community behind it. And actually, one of the appeal is that you're not locked into a single part of the software world, if that makes any sense. For example, TypeScript, JavaScript, very locked in terms of front-end technologies. I know there are exceptions where you can use it to write mobile apps and desktop apps using frameworks like Electron and everything, but I think originally JavaScript was just very limited as a language, a scripting language for the web world. What I do like about Golang is that I don't think that was really the goal of Golang to be writing, well, obviously not for front-end technologies, but it's so versatile in the sense of if you want to write a terminal application, you could do it. If you want to write an application that has a bit of GUI behind it, I believe you could do it as well. And if you want to write like a backend server, you could use that. So I'm not saying any other languages can. I'm not saying JavaScript can't do that. I just like how there's a lot of, I guess, built-in packages and built-in support that already comes out of the box and you could just use it to build stuff. I'd like to brag one of my few favorite projects that is currently on my GitHub, pinned on there, was built with Go. And it's just some really simple terminal apps that the more I use it, the more I find I like coding in that language. And it's definitely more subjective than objective at this point. So actually, some people do like seeing those speed tests and everything in terms of like how fast can your application run or how performant your language is at the end of the day. And Go does perform pretty well in a lot of those. So maybe that is more, I guess, objective on that front. But that's kind of why I find Go interesting and something that I'll keep on looking into. And I guess for now, my favorite language. Question number 11. Why did you decide to learn Go and how do you like it? Yeah, just following through with, I guess, my previous answer on that. Well, actually, in terms of why did I learn Go, it's a fun random story where when I did a lot of TypeScript, and that was mostly like my day-to-day at work, everywhere, building my own side projects, TypeScript was very useful. There was always something about, hey, if I were not to be able to use TypeScript, if it disappears within the next 5 seconds, what would I do? And this kind of thing about like putting different eggs in different baskets more than anything. But so that's kind of where the technology of, I started building more like backend servers also during that time for some reason. Using Express is great. Don't get me wrong, Express.js. But there are a lot of good practices around the industry that you kind of take inspiration from. So one of the thing I was looking into is I just want to build a very performant, fast backend server that'll blow my own mind, honestly. Not the industry's mind, but just my own mind. And a lot of candidates shows up during that time. I think the two that I kind of settled on was either Rust or Go. So as a test or a way of learning how to build stuff, I decided to make a backend server for each one of them. So I built one in Go and built one in Rust. And the way I would describe the difference is Go is definitely a little bit more high level than Rust. Rust is way closer to C, C++, where a lot of memory allocation is a concern in the language. As opposed to Go, it's just a little bit higher level where you don't really have to think about that, where there's more stuff that comes out of the box, there's more stuff abstracted so that it's more, I guess, dev-friendly to use. So that's kind of how I kind of just made the comparison real quickly. And for me to always be doing trade-offs between what I want to do is I want to build stuff. And in terms of learning how to build things, there's always a learning curve. And the fact that both were good answers, I just really had a coin toss on that one. So went with Go. Doesn't mean that I'll never learn Rust. Doesn't mean I'll do more Rust in the future. But Go was something that it's been working well, and I've been having a great time using it. So that's at least how I decided how to learn Go. Question number 12. If interested in tech, but not currently in the tech industry or have little knowledge of it, what is the most valuable thing to know that would set you apart from other tech laymen? I think the most valuable thing to know is that the tech industry, of course, is very aggressive and intimidating for anybody who doesn't have any background to it, but I think it needs people that do not come from a full-blown, pure tech background, if that makes any sense. It's like the world, you need opinions from a lot of different perspectives before you can actually decide on what is good. So I think the leverage that a lot of people that are, I guess, intimidated to go into the tech is know that you provide a lot of value. You provide a lot of insights, seeing different side of a coin, seeing how to tackle problems from a non-technical way. So I think one thing that is valuable if anybody who is trying to get into the tech world without a full, you know, massive knowledge behind it is try to relate how you see tech from a, I guess, non-technical perspective, but also make sure you have like similarities. I know a lot of people who, for example, worked in support that works really closely with a web application, for example, and they see the application differently than people who built it. But then if you slowly bridge the gap between, wait, why does it work like that and how it's built like that, then that's something that is extremely valuable. And that doesn't require somebody to have massive tech knowledge. So yeah, rely on your experience. Try to think about how things are built. Think about how you use the application. Also, really important, write it down. If you're able to show people that you have thought about these different use cases, that's definitely something that will make you stand out, if anything. Question number 13. What is your opinion on the metaverse? Yeah, to be completely honest, I haven't really thought about this topic a lot. In a sense of, I think objectively, the metaverse is great in terms of it pushes the boundary of what technology is. It pushes the boundary of how you build technology, of build things, how AR is different than VR, and how, you know, the sensory you could actually leverage, like, the touch in all of this as well. I think it really just pushes, you know, the boundary, as I was saying. So objectively, I think the metaverse is pretty cool. New concepts, new ideas. from a society point of view, I think that's another way of thinking about this, where how does it change how we interact with each other? How do we interact with the space? I think another example that happened recently, obviously, is like, you know, everybody being on video calls all the time. That is very different than what it was before. And that's like a change in society at the end of the day. So I think I would kind of attribute the success of Metaverse if it kind of disrupts our day-to-day like that. And of course, there, it's yet to be seen in terms of how it's going to pan out. But I think that's another wave aspect that it will, I guess, slowly appear in our lives. And then it depends on how, you know, how much it lasts, how much it stands. And but yeah, I think the emphasis is behind the technology. I've always been a geek of technology at the end of the day. So my opinion on the Metaverse is that I think it's interesting. I think it's something that really, you know, makes people think about new creative way of solving problems or making a problem and then solving it. Question number 14. Is there someone in your field you really look up to? If so, who and why? Oh man, I'm gonna have the most boring answer to this is, no, unfortunately, I don't really have like a specific name of somebody who I look up to. Well, I guess not like a famous name. I think a lot of people who I look up to are people who I've personally worked with, who I've personally witnessed why they're a great person or why they've done something great. So I think in terms of, are there individuals that I've met in my career of working in tech? Absolutely, yes. Shout out to Carlos, actually. I did an episode with Carlos earlier on the podcast. If you guys want to check it out, just, you know, scroll back up a little bit. But yeah, we used to work together maybe like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And he was the tech lead on that team that we were working on. And during that time, that's one of the individuals that I keep on just learning so much every single day, whether it's during code reviews or whether it's the way he was implementing like a problem. I think it's something like that that really just, you know, puts an impact on me. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's something that I learned from. And just seeing him today, like just pushing himself, doing more stuff. And even if we don't work together, you still have so much to like keep up with him and ask like, oh, wait, how did you end up doing this? And then it just keeps on building and building and building. I think that's pretty much like the definition of somebody I would just look up to all the time and, you know, just try to do as good, if not better at the end of the day. So, all right, now we're diving into the ambition section of the question. There we go. Question number 15. If Perry didn't have to worry about money, what would he spend his life doing / pursuing? Yeah, quite a fair few people asked about this one. And I think the easy answer is probably this podcast. Do you know what I mean? In the sense of I get to talk to so many different people and I obviously don't make money off of this at the moment or if ever in the future anyways, but I think a lot of it is if money wasn't a thing in the world or if there wasn't, you know, bills and all that kind of stuff to think about. I think the reason why I do this is mostly to keep on learning things. And if I have all the time in the world to learn stuff day to day, this is one of the best channels I have at the moment to do it. So it kind of forces myself to talk to people, not just in tech, just people that just do stuff on a day-to-day basis and think about how they do their operations at the end. So for a very easy answer, my dream job would just be talking to really cool people doing things. But I guess like on the other side of if it wasn't this, I would probably also think about there's a concept of learning things, but there's also the fun part of like trying to, I guess, like teach it to other people or like make it known to other people. So if you spend a lot of time, let's say like you picked up an instrument recently and you learned so much behind it, there's always the next step of, you know, just sharing it with people and trying to help other people get into it. So I think if I had all the time in the world and not have to worry about any of the money stuff and all that kind of thing, I think it's just picking up all the hobbies that I personally enjoy and just trying to, I guess, maybe teach it to other people and see why I find it interesting. And then maybe other people might also pick it up too. So question number 16, of all the personal projects you've started over the years, which have you A, enjoyed the most and B, think could have been the most profitable? I really like this question because I'm guilty of asking this question to everyone to be like, oh, what's your side project? What's this project you've been working on? And yeah, for me to answer this is the most memorable one is I was working on this project that was, this is like, you know, when there's a big boom about, oh, AI and like machine learning model and how do you leverage that to apply it to, you know, day-to-day stuff. So the way I was thinking about that is I was working on this, I guess, like prediction model about football games, English football game to be more specific. So like the Premier League, you have Tottenham, of course, you have Liverpool, you have Man United, you have everybody playing in this league. And the whole point is I wanted to find a way to be able to predict the scores. Don't get me wrong, people have tried to answer this question a million times over the years. But when you throw in the factor of, I guess, AI and prediction and machine learning, so I kind of built this website where there wasn't any machine learning or AI behind it. The whole point is that you would kind of crowdsource people's opinions and feelings about what do you think this match is going to end up like. So a lot of that was for me to really just experiment and, you know, just leverage people to be like, hey, if you believe that Tottenham is going to win against Burnley this weekend, then put your either money in your mouth or put some points behind it. So I guess it was a lot of like fun aspects of trying to see what kind of way people have in terms of how much belief they have in a team to win. So I kind of built a website about that. It was really fun because there's a bit of math, I guess, you kind of put behind it. But also it was a full-fledged website with a front-end, back-end, and database as well. So just being able to touch all of it and apply to, I guess, some real case scenario. Because what happens is that the game would happen, and then you could just look back in terms of how the prediction model kind of came. That kind of was very exciting. It's not available at the moment, but hey, it could come back at any time. So hopefully that answers the part A of which side projects I've enjoyed the most. But in terms of B, could have been most profitable. That's always a speculative answer. I think, honestly, if that idea that I was just describing kind of made it big, then of course that could be profitable. But unfortunately, I don't think I have a decisive answer in terms of which one's going to be the most profitable, hypothetically. Question number 17. What's the future for your podcast? Yeah, I like this question. The answer has always been, I don't know. Well, the future of the podcast is always like, I will absolutely do these episodes whenever I still have the interest and the time and the passion to talk to other people and to just, you know, see what their world looks like. So the future of this podcast is, yes, I have a full-time job and it's not this podcast, but I will always try to find time to push out, you know, different content just because it's for myself. I keep on saying it. So it's very much on my own cadence. And if it goes big, it goes big. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think this consistency really helps me with my lifestyle when you kind of break down your schedule in terms of, oh yeah, there's something that's recurring and that you enjoy. That's the way I see this. So, I mean, if it's any hopeful for anyone, I'm going to keep on doing this as long as I can. And you just got to believe that I have the passion and the drive to keep on doing it. So that is the future for this podcast. Question number 18. Would you quit your podcast if the number of listeners remain low? In terms of why I do this, I came out saying is that it's a very much a learning experience for myself. It's a little bit selfish at the end of the day. But in terms of listeners being low, I guess I could look up all the stats, right? You can always look at how many people started this podcast this month, this week, this day. But I really do think that as long as there is hopefully one listener that learns something out of this, I think that's kind of where it sits at the moment, in a sense of I'll just keep on doing it just because it's good, hopefully, for my own learning purposes, for my own growth. But in terms of keeping track with the listeners, it might just get too much in my head at the end of the day. So yeah, I'll just keep on doing this, even if the number of listeners remain low. Question number 19. Aside from the podcast, what other side hustle are you working on? Actively, I don't think I have that many side hustles going on. I think everybody always has ideas in terms of like, oh, how do I build this in my free time and monetize it? And it's okay even if you don't. This hustle culture thing, like you hear it all the time, and it's really just whatever fits people's interest and people's schedule and people's capability at the end of the day. So at the moment, I really don't have any crazy side hustles going on. I love helping people out if that's considering a side hustle. So if anybody needs help in tech and it's just a fun problem to solve, then that's where I would be more than happy to come in. But in terms of these side projects of, you know, having them online and run on a full server database and front end application and just having those, like trying to monetize it and trying to have like a lot of users onto it. Nothing currently active at the moment, but hey, you never know, maybe something tomorrow. Question number 20. What skills do you want to develop right now? Yeah, I'm gonna take that question as one, I guess, engineering skills. No, that's not even fair. I'll take it as any skills, because in the engineering world, and even just the world in general, there's all kinds of skills, right? There's soft skills, there's hard skills. But for me personally, the skills I usually want to develop is, I think it's putting stuff into practice. So what I mean by that is that you read a lot of content online in the sense of like, theoretically, here's how you implement this way of making your network API call faster, or here's a server that processes like a million requests within a millisecond or something like that. So I think I'm at the point where I love learning all this kind of stuff, and this is really just trying to apply it, whether it's at work or just your day-to-day side project. So some of the stuff when we talk about these optimum like performance of everything, like the skills I want to develop right now, I'll just pick up Go and I'll just try to build a server and see how performant it is and see how responsive all that can be at some point. So that's one way of looking at engineering skills I'm trying to develop. And on the other front is always just look at what I already have ongoing. For example, even talking to this podcast or like just talking in general, those are stuff that I think about developing all the time. So, and then on the other front, of course, like when it's kind of like the job related, it's engineering operations, for example, where you kind of predict how long an engineering project is going to take or what kind of people do you need to build engineering projects or even just business in general, like the life of startup of where do you start from nothing and then you kind of have something at the end of the day, kind of made out of thin air, honestly. So yeah, I've kind of listed a million things that I want to develop, but I think they all kind of have the same North Star of just trying to be better at the end of the day. Question number 21. What is your secret for feeling content in your work slash life in general? Oh boy, yeah, the philosophical stuff. No, I'm just kidding on that. I think, people do say that like I always seem like content and like optimist and you know, excited about everything that I do. But a lot of that is just, I guess, setting expectation. That's like the phrase you hate hearing from anybody, not just your parents or anybody that you work with, but I tend to set, I guess, or I try to set realistic expectations with whatever I do. For example, at work, there's always like tough stuff that happens, right? We need this project due in 2 days, or hey, we want to build this stuff, but we're not allowed to build it because there's other priorities at the moment. So in terms of expectation, you just got to, I guess, communicate. Yeah, just tell other people why it's difficult, why it's hard, and also just have a, you know, the next step. Always have something to do to make it better and try to be closer to the goal that you all want to be at. So in terms of being content, that's probably how I see it, at least on the work side, is that there's always a solution to things. And just know that the world is not perfect. As long as you give a heads up, as long as you communicate a lot, I feel like contentment for me is making sure that just everybody's on the same page. And from that, the rest of the problems gets a lot easier. That's at least how I see contentment at work. But when we talk about contentment in life in general, that's definitely a bigger one in the sense of it's very personal. Everybody's contentment is like different. The best part about it is that I think how you'd say is it's relative. Being content is a lot of times is it content with yourself, with who you are today versus a year ago of who you are? Or is it the difference between who you are today versus somebody else's contentment? So I keep on saying that it's very not objective, but my own contentment and how I know that I'm, you know, hopefully more optimistic today than I was yesterday or the day before or the year before was just think about everything that you've gone through up till this point and just be thankful for a lot of it. If you're able to get up on your feet every day without any major pain and if you're still in touch with people that you love and you're able to talk to them and you're excited for the next time you're going to go have food with them and all that. I think those are the stuff that we live day to day that are, it seems quite simple, it seems quite straightforward, but if you add all of them and you're able to reminisce between all of those events, then I guess that's kind of how I would gauge contentment in life. So yeah, there's a lot of contentment in careers, there's a lot of contentment in your day-to-day life, but try to help yourself first, and then a lot of times, of course, use the help from everybody else, and then if you do have enough time after that, is help others. I think that really just drives my contentment through life. Question number 22. What are your dreams like? Do you find they reflect what's happening in your conscious? this question really does fit in the, I guess, ambition section, if anything. But in the very big picture, what my dreams feel like? I have two ranges of dreams. One of them is that like it's quite, it takes a lot of aspects of my day-to-day life. So if something happens at work and I'm like, oh wait, that's a memorable thing. Then they might pop in my dream sometimes. But then there's these completely wild fantasy fiction ones where it just doesn't make any sense. It's like a random plot where I'm just maybe running down a hallway, getting chased by this creature. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh wait, never mind. I know this creature and the creature's name is Billy and we're just having a good time. And that's it. Like, there's no middle area. It's either something that is like, oh, look, it kind of happens to in my day-to-day life, or it's another thing where it's completely fictional at that point. And I guess that kind of answers the question, like,
I guess this would reflect what's happening in your conscious. So conscious, I believe, is like when I'm actually awake and running around and doing stuff. It's like part of it, yes. I think a lot of what I dream of does reflect on my day-to-day. But also, there are nights where I just don't dream at all, so. Question number 23. How long do you expect to live? Am I supposed to just throw out a number? I don't have a number. I say I'll live as long as I can, I guess, or as long as I will. I mean, if it's a long life, then great. If it's not a long life, then great as well. Mostly in the sense of, yeah, just enjoy your day today. I just try to keep up with as much as I can in terms of health-wise, in terms of news-wise, in terms of like fun things to do. And that is my expectation. So I'm just going to live like that every single day. And hopefully that is going to keep me happy and going. Question number 24. What are the biggest lessons you have learned over the past 2 years about your health? Yeah, I love this question. It kind of dovetails over the health question from earlier in terms of how long I expect to live, but the biggest lesson is I will never take my health for granted. Not even just in the past 2 years, if just in general, is it's weird. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe like it's old man injury syndrome or something like that, but there's a point in your life where you just pick up injuries out of nowhere. Parts of your body just starts hurting that are parts of the body that just never hurt before. I consistently play football, or I try to at least play weekly football, which is English football and not the American football. And just out of nowhere, you just have like injuries. Like, oh, the front of my thigh just hurts randomly. Or, and of course, like depending on, you know, severity, there's like ankle injuries, all that kind of stuff. So for me, it's a lot of that where I knew they would happen. Everybody playing sports, anybody just living life in general, there always are like, I guess, like stuff happening with their body. And in terms of my health and how do I keep up with it is, yeah, I just try to strengthen as much as I can in terms of fitness, stamina, just muscle building, a lot of that kind of stuff. And I just try to keep that as healthy as possible. So I guess biggest lessons is, yeah, just put in the time day to day to be better, to be healthier, to eat better, to work out better, to sleep better at the end of the day. And that's kind of the biggest lessons I'll tell to anyone is everything is baby steps and it's never too late to start. Question number 25. What is the most significant thing that happened to you over lockdown? And of course, lockdown is referring to the pandemic of starting, what, 2020? The COVID pandemic, where everybody was just forced to stay at home. I have a pretty straightforward answer to this one is the most significant thing is me buying an electric guitar when I've never played the guitar before. And till today, I absolutely love it. So I think it's significant in the sense of it's just a new thing that I got to learn and something that I really... I guess you kind of have it for life. It's kind of like learning how to ride a bike. So I would compare it definitely for people. The first time you learn how to ride a bike, it's quite significant. And for me during the lockdown, picking up the electric guitar has been my highlight. Question number 26. What is a secret thing you wish you had done these past 2 years? If we think about the past 2 years, it kind of overlaps, I guess, with the lockdown of everybody just staying home and not being able to, I guess, like go out as often. The one thing I absolutely regret, and I would absolutely wish to have done this, is starting a master's during that time. I know people have done it, and by the time the whole pandemic was kind of like over, people would have their master's degree and they would have been done with it. And they would have been doing all that remote, and it kind of just, the timeline was kind of crazy to think about. It's perfectly lined up. So I think that is probably my biggest regret, is not starting a master's during the pandemic. Question number 27. What is Perry's biggest fear? Okay, yeah, this is definitely a personal one at the end of the day. Well, to be fair, I think a lot of what I fear at the end, or I'm scared about, I think they're quite common in the sense of, number one is I just want everybody to be healthy. If there's any kind of complications, all that kind of stuff, I think I always think about it and I'm always like scared of that, I guess. So that's definitely a pretty, I guess, straightforward one. But another fear actually that's a bit more personal is just the fear of not being interested in things anymore, if that makes sense. Like, I can't speak for other people, but I feel like there's always a point in somebody's life where you're just like, I'm so tired of everything and I don't want to pursue anything anymore. And it feels like it's done at that point. And I'm terrified of that. So I think that is definitely a fear that I do have. But on the other front is, thank God the world is massive. There's so much to see, to do, to learn. And I feel like that's something that I can always feed off of. So yeah. Question number 28. What are some embarrassing moments you've had? I guess I could answer this from like a more general perspective. I don't think there was like singular moments in my life when I'm embarrassed. Maybe there were, but I feel like I just blocked them out of my mind. But The one that I know that kind of happens here and there is when somebody asks you about something, maybe in like a professional setting at work or something like that, and you just don't know the answer to. Of course, you can be embarrassed, but I think over the years, kind of cope with it. And the best part, at least for me, is I come across these moments where I'm like, oh, wait, I should know this. I'm really embarrassed and I don't know it. But funny enough, if you just communicate it to be like, hey, look, I don't have the answer right now, but I can find it, it seems to resolve a lot of the concerns and, you know, reassure a lot of people. So I've been kind of just applying that to, I guess, mostly everything I tackle in my life is, yeah, you'll end up always doing something embarrassing. It's going to happen for sure, not just me, for you. Like, tomorrow you're going to do something embarrassing. But yeah, life is fun where you can just cope with it and learn how to acknowledge it and just be like, hey, I mean, I know better now and I'll do better next time. Question number 29. You always say you're not creative, but I'm pretty dang sure you are. What are some creative things you're doing now or that you would like to do? Yeah, sorry guys. I've definitely said this a million times where I really am not like a creative artsy person, like a left brain kind of thing. I believe that's the side of the brain that is more creative. And I always blame it on the fact that, hey, I work in tech, you know, when you write this line of code, that's what it's going to do. The code never lies. You got to be like very technical at the end of the day. But I guess like my biggest complaint for myself is where's the creativity? Not saying that the tech world is not creative. It definitely is. You find creative solutions to solve a lot of problems. But in the sense of I'm not creative of, you know, being able to pick up a sketch pad and just draw something out of nowhere, or being the creativity of having a good visual, pretty design for a website. So those are the parts that I feel like I've always been missing. I've always wanted to learn more. And I guess in terms of what are the creative things I'm doing right now that hopefully helps me do better or be better at it is, once in a while, I do think, like, for example, like playing an instrument, there's a long period of my time where I just stopped playing it, any instruments, and just picking up the electric guitar again, I feel like that gives you a bit of creativity because at some point you kind of learn different notes and then you kind of just improvise at that point and it's just creating music out of, I guess, a blank canvas at that point. So that's one part of what I think I'm doing creative a little bit. But on another front, when I was talking about the sketchpad, it's something that's quite cool, at least in New York where I live at the moment, is there's a lot of museums that are completely free, and then there's nothing stopping you from going there with a sketchpad and just drawing stuff. So we've been doing that for a little while now, just going to different museums and drawing. And I think like that's another way of, yeah, your work is very technical, your day-to-day is very technical, but in terms of having a creative outlet, that's something that I look forward to a lot. So yeah, moving forward is just trying to find these different contrasty outlets to your day-to-day that lets you be more creative and, you know, be not more original, but I guess it helps the soft skills of just being more creative, thinking on your feet, and just being content at the end of the day, being able to create stuff. So question number 30, what is something that impresses people but is low-key a result of childhood trauma? How do I even answer this question? This is clearly not my field of expertise at all, but if I had to think about it in terms of, I guess, what impresses people nowadays, I guess maybe something that I would probably notice is like if somebody's like extremely overly independent in the sense of like, and in the best way possible, in the sense of like they're able to tackle everything, whether it's at work, you kind of assign them like a project and they're like, oh yeah, done, easy, don't need help with anyone. Or even just in life in general, when people go through a lot of different stuff and they've always managed to get through it, and you're like, it's a strong, independent individual. It's a great quality to have, but at the same time, maybe if you think about what's behind it, what made a person that independent and so strong at the end, there might be a lot of reasons behind it, maybe in the sense of like they were probably forced to be independent and being able to handle their own business at the end. So I think that's probably what I would assume. Like, don't get me wrong, this is a lot of assumptions. And behind every impressive story, I'm sure there's some hardships behind it. So on to the last section of questions, which are the miscellaneous questions. Question number 31, what's your favorite condiment? There's absolutely no debate about this. It's mustard. It could be yellow mustard, it could be Dijon mustard, it could be grainy mustard, it could be the really spicy yellow mustard you get at the dim sum places or Chinese restaurants. I don't know. I mean, on the technical side, it's just less calorie than all the other condiments or most other condiments. Ketchup, you are insane for how much calorie you have in there. Mayo as well. But yeah, I think I've always loved mustard on everything, so that is something that you should know about me. A close second is probably wasabi. I think that's a condiment. Freaking love wasabi. Question number 32. What is your favorite color? This has nothing to do with the fact that I kind of do like wasabi, but growing up, green has been quite my favorite color. My favorite pair of Converse growing up was a high top fours green pair of Converse. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't wear like green like from head to toe. I think it's just like these speck of green. I think nowadays, actually, it's more towards the emerald green. Obviously, in like the most crazy scenario, the most, I guess, piece that I want in the world is a good like watch that has a emerald green watch face, if that makes any sense. But yeah, emerald green is where it's at nowadays. Question number 33. If you're a pasta shape, which pasta shape would you be and why? I love these questions. I don't even know the name of it. It's the one that looks like tagliatelle, which is just like a, I guess, like a thin, thick pasta noodle, but with the ribs on the side of it. So you could kind of imagine like lasagna sheets have like those ribs on the side of it, but I want that on the tagliatelle. That is my favorite pasta shape. Somebody please DM me or something the name of that one. Question number 34. What's the worst toilet you've reviewed? What is the best toilet you've reviewed? Yeah, as a context for the people who think this is a completely random question, is funny enough, on my Instagram story specifically, whenever I go to, I guess, like restaurants or any kind of public spaces that people can have access to, I would usually go into the bathroom and do like a quick review of it and post it on my Instagram story. So it's usually like a 5-star system. Sometimes you get 1, sometimes you get like right down the middle 3 stars. But most of the time it's, yeah. The worst one I've ever reviewed, I have to call this out, but Mercato Metropolitano in London. It's not great. Don't get me wrong, the whole venue itself is amazing. There's like so many food stalls and there's a brewery in the middle of basically London, the city and everything. So, but if you do find the bathrooms, at least for the men's side, it's just dark, smelly, it's a metal tray, it's tiny, it's basically what you could give, like, you know, no stars or just a 1 star out of 5 if anything. But the best toilet I've been to, though, however, this one I have to call out, this was also in London, Chelsea Harbour Hotel, in their hotel lobby. If you use the bathroom over there, it's amazing. It smells incredible. It has reusable, like, I guess, like, one-time use towels that you use for your hands, and then you throw it away, and then I'm pretty sure they just, like, wash it in steam and all that. But yeah, they have, like, hand wash, hand lotion. I think there was just a lot of reasons why it's a great toilet out there. So those would be the two I would definitely call out in terms of toilet reviews. Question number 35. Well, these are a batch of questions about my hair, apparently. How long is Perry's hair right now? How long does it take to blow dry your hair? Do you think you'll ever cut your hair? And if so, when? I'm glad that people think about it a lot. For context, I guess, I haven't cut my hair for what? Like since summer 2012 now? Well, at least half of my head. So half my head is shaved. The other side is I've just let it grow for the past 10, 11 years. But in terms of how long is it, it kind of goes like way past the low of my back at the moment. Kind of just past the butt, I guess. That's how long it is. How long does it take to blow dry your hair? I usually don't blow dry it. It's kind of, I guess it's a bad thing. I just usually wrap it in a towel and then let it air dries. Whatever. Maybe an hour, 2 hours. Don't really keep track of it. Sorry. Do you think you'll ever cut your hair? I will one day. A lot of it, I think it's not really going to be like cut it half length. That's probably when I do get rid of this extremely long hair. I'm just going to nip it at the bud and try to find somewhere I could donate it. Question number 36. What is your dream car? 1995 Honda Accord, red wine, corduroy seats. I'm only saying this because I obviously grew up learning how to drive on it. But the cool thing about that was, I don't know, just stepping on the gas on that one felt different than driving any other cars nowadays. Nowadays, in all the cars, you would always feel like there's like it feels like you're stepping on air and the car just goes, obviously. And I guess that's a good thing technology-wise, but yeah, I think those kind of cars, at least in 1995, like that kind of period, you just feel more the engine. So maybe that's one way. And I think a lot of it is nostalgic. So I'm going to stick to the answer with 1995 Honda Accord red wine specifically as my dream car. Okay, fine. I really do like the Porsche Carrera 911 S as well. I've gotten to drive that once in my life and it just sounds so good. Question number 37. What are your hidden talents? None, nothing. don't have any hidden talents. The one thing I could think of is, it's not hidden nor a talent, but apparently I speak really quickly. I don't know if that's a good talent or not, but I think over the past years, I've just had that pointed out to me a lot. So I guess that's the hidden talent. Question number 38. What is your number one karaoke song? Don't have one. I'm just terrible at karaoke. But I guess if I have to do one, it would either be something like Sex on Fire, Kings of Leon, or Gimme 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 from ABBA, or Stand By Me by Benny King. Last but not least, question number 39. Describe the last place you took a walk. The last place I took a walk was... Great question, by the way. I love this because you don't really think about it. It was actually in Brooklyn, more specifically in Bed-Stuy, because I don't live in that area, but I was checking out the place out and I'm just having a walk in terms of checking out the neighborhood, so... Well, that wraps up the AMA. Hope you guys learned a thing or two about me, but... Yeah, just honestly, thank you for being part of the journey. Episode 30, that's so crazy to think about. So until then, big love, have a great day, and I'll catch you guys on the next one.